Welcome back to Good Food on KCRW. I'm Evan Kleinman. If pizza can be compared to a religion, it used to be that the cult of Neapolitan pizza, with its super thin crust and wood-fired ovens, was the biggest show in town. But lately, there's another pizza movement afoot, one with a growing number of acolytes. I'm talking about pan pizza, the kind that's cut into thick, doughy squares with an ample topping, golden brown cheese, sometimes baked into frilly edges.
This has now become my number one style of pizza, but only when it uses the embedded cheese technique.
Peter Reinhardt is a baking expert and educator. He is passionate about pan pizza in all its forms, from Detroit style to Sicilian squares to focaccia. He's even written a how-to called Perfect Pan Pizza. Hi.
Hey, it's good to be with you.
It's great to have you. You're such an amazing bread master and such a pizza aficionado that I'm excited to talk to you about this latest iteration of people's fascination.
It's amazing also that how many pizza aficionados there are out there. It seems like everybody is an expert on pizza these days.
It's true. And because of the internet, everybody can go down rabbit holes, right?
Exactly. And there we are to catch them and to show them the way out.
Yeah. But I feel like it's been a long time coming for pan pizza.
Mm-hmm.
That for a lot of years, it hasn't gotten a lot of respect, except in pockets where it has intense regionality and identity.
Exactly. You kind of love what you grow up with, but not everybody grew up with it.
So how many different styles are out there that we would think of as being some type of pan pizza?
That's a good question. I mean, the ones that I've been charting are some of the classics, like the Northern Italian pizza that we call focaccia is typically baked in a pan, though it doesn't have to be, but we know it as a pan pizza, which is very similar to, you know, the manifestation that came in through New York area and Brooklyn, the Sicilian pizza, which may or may not actually be from Sicily, but they've got that name somewhere along the line. But when you really break it down, it's kind of a variation on focaccia. And then there's another version from Tuscany that they call
Schiacciata.
Yeah, and I always struggle with the pronunciation. You should probably say it better than I always call it schiacciata, but that's because I'm an American and I never know how to say it properly. But yeah, and that's really just focaccia from central Italy. It's just a variation again on a theme. And all of these things can be baked in or out of a pan, just like pizza can be baked in and out of a pan. And then sfingioni, as you said, was from, that's more of the true Sicilian style. The one that's really having its moment in the sun is what we call Detroit style pizza, which only has that name Detroit style attached to it because it kind of was the hidden gem of the Detroit area for about the last 65 years. And then somehow it broke out of the pack about 5-6 years ago when a few chefs in New York and a few of the Detroit guys moved to other cities like Telluride, Colorado, and began making this deep pan pizza, which is different from deep dish pizza, and it got traction. And now it's exploding all over the country, and frankly, when it's done well, it's phenomenal.
Describe the ideal qualities it has.
So I think what gives the Detroit style its following and what makes it beloved by the people who love it, and pretty much anyone who has it loves it, is what I call the undercrust. That's where it all begins. And I guess to backtrack just a little bit, I have to say that with all pizzas, 80 to 90% of what makes a pizza memorable is the crust, not the topping. That's my opinion. You know, people argue about that kind of stuff all the time, but I think I'm pretty good company with the feeling that crust is the key to the difference between a good versus a great pizza, because it's the crust that allows it to be memorable, which is my definition of greatness. And if you have a great crust, anything you put on top is kind of like a bonus. If you have great toppings, but just a so-so crust, then you've got an interesting, but not necessarily memorable pizza. So just starting from that point, the method for making a Detroit pizza is, you know, requires it to be in a pan with a lot of either olive oil or butter or a combination of the two, greasing the pan so that when you bake the pizza, it really kind of fries the undercrust, or sometimes called the underskirt of the pizza. So you get this quality of kind of like the best hot buttered toast that you've ever had. And if you all recall how toast sounds and feels when you bite into it hot out of the toaster, it kind of has a toffee-like crumble to it, and it just breaks into shards, and it's very satisfying. It's kind of like flaky pie crust.
This new book of yours, Perfect Pan Pizza, has some really incredible photographs in it. And one of my favorite photographs is a picture of this underskirt.
Yeah, my favorite too. I love that photo. You almost want to eat the page.
Yeah. And then how many inches is that crust?
So the thickness of it, and here's where my version of the Detroit pizza differs with some of the ones I've seen executed in Detroit pizzerias, is in theory, it's going to look kind of thick. Like a minimum, it's going to look at least an inch to an inch and a half thick, which I think is, for pizza crust, is a little bready. And I don't like my pizza crust bready, which is probably why I avoided it for a long time until I finally had a version where it was just so well done that I loved it. And what made it work, even though it was thick, was that the interior was not bready tasting, but kind of creamy tasting. So like you have this sort of contrast between hot buttered toast undercrust and a very crispy edge all around the perimeter where it fries, you know, in as it touches the pan with oil. And then you've got this soft, creamy interior crust. And if it's too thick, it'll be bready-like. And then I find it just dominates too much and you feel like you're eating too much bread and not enough pizza. But when it's done right, what looks like a thick crust should almost compress and taste, for lack of a better analogy, like the best bowl of cream of wheat that you've ever had. And so you get all these factors going. And of course, we know from some of the later books that have come out about, you know, salt and acid and heat and all these contrasting factors that make food taste great. When you have all of this going on in one bite, it elevates it to another level. And so then you've got, of course, on top of all that, you've got your cheese and toppings and sauce and whatever else you're going to use. My innovation, I think this is sort of my original technique that I developed with the team down in Texas as we were working on a Detroit-style pizza for their restaurant, is we add half of the cheese onto the dough before it rises for its final rise. Because we give the dough about 4 to 5 hours of rise after it fills the pan. And as it rises around this cheese, it embeds the cheese in the dough. And then you put the other half of the cheese on right before you bake it. So you're basically getting cheese on top of cheese, which is now, to give another analogy, it's kind of like you're eating a great grilled cheese sandwich with cheese and toppings on top of that. So you just think of how much we love a great grilled cheese sandwich, how much we love pizza, put it all together, and voila, it's like unlike anything you've ever had. And I'm pretty excited about it because every time I make it for people for the first time, they flip out. They go, I've never had a pizza like this before. It looks like it's going to be too thick, but it's not. It doesn't look like anything I've ever had before, but I can't believe how good it is. So I think we've kind of added maybe a new word to the pizza vocabulary, the embedded cheese technique. And if you get a chance to try it, I think you'll agree that it's a game changer.
I'm definitely going to try it. Now, in the book, you talk about using Munster if you don't have access to Brick, which is the, as you said, the traditional cheese.
Yeah, Brick is made in Wisconsin. It was developed about 100 years ago by a German cheesemaker, and it picked up its own following. And the guys who started the Detroit pizza style about 1945-ish or so, right after World War II. And all the story, the backstory on that can be easily found, but with a quick internet search, just go to Detroit Pizza Origins, and it'll tell you that whole story. And he had access to this Wisconsin brick cheese that he liked. It's kind of a in flavor, a little bit of cheddar flavor, a little bit of, you know, kind of a provolone, even a Gouda, all those complex cheeses. It's much more flavorful than just plain mozzarella. And that's what he used. But it's very, very hard for home cooks to find it. So I called one of the companies that makes it. And there's only a few creameries in Wisconsin that make brick cheese. And I said, what should I tell people, you know, to do? Because I've made it with lots of other cheeses and they work, but what do you recommend? And he said, we only make two cheeses in our place. We make Brick and we make Munster. And what most people don't know is that the process for making both is almost identical. We put a slightly different enzyme in the Brick. It gives it a little more tanginess, but otherwise it's very similar. The Munster's a little creamier, which I find to be a plus. But the problem with the Munster is, to me, it's not quite edgy and sharp enough. So what I like to do, I've made it with 100% Munster. What I prefer to do is about 25% cheddar, like a medium-aged cheddar, and 75% Munster. And I get a lot of the flavor profile of the brick cheese. And then my other favorite cheese to use is Fontina because it's just wonderful cheese. And you can do that almost just by itself. It's so good. But any good melting cheese will work. And I encourage people to just kind of play around with their favorite cheeses and mix and match. And you can't go wrong. It's like, as long as the cheese will melt, you don't want to use dry cheese like Parmesan or Romano because it will burn before it melts. But any good melter will work on the top.
Now, let's talk about dough for a minute.
Sure.
You have three master doughs for this type of pan pizza.
Mm-hmm.
You have a whole wheat, a levain, and you have a yeasted white, correct?
Yeah, kind of the classic white, which ends up always being the most popular because it's what we're familiar with and it works really great. There's an interest in whole grain flours these days, and I encourage it. I've written a lot of books about baking with whole grain, so I try to always offer that option. But I have found, again, that for these pizzas, people want them light and airy. So I suggest maybe a blend of 25% whole wheat flour or maybe rye flour and 75% bread flour. And that gives you enough of sort of that country effect, almost like a pan de campagna. It's got enough wheat that it gives it some earth tone, but it doesn't become too heavy or over-dominate with the flavors of whole wheat. But there's no rule that says you can't go 100% whole wheat if you prefer. And then that's dough number two. So I call that the country dough. And then the third dough, as you mentioned, is the levain. It's a naturally leavened bread using sourdough starter. And it gives you the option of either using all sourdough, which is a longer fermentation time and requires a little more patience. But for those people who like working in the sourdough side, they know what that takes. Or you can kind of use the sourdough starter and some yeast as well and do what I call the mixed method, which allows the dough to stay on the same rising schedule as the regular dough, as the classic dough, but you get the complexity of the sourdough starter as well. So it's three different doughs, but with quite a number of options in between.
So let's talk about toppings for a minute. I've always thought that if you have a really beautiful, fragile, in the sense that it's very wet and with a very airy result, that overloading the pizza is kind of a sin.
Yeah. Well, certainly with the, you know, classic Neapolitan pizzas, you can overload it like we do on American style pizza and do kitchen sink pizzas. But to pizza purists, that's considered a kind of sinful in a way. So I always suggest maybe no more than three toppings just so that you don't muddle the flavors. But with these pizzas, it's kind of a different kind of pizza. It can be more, let's say, embellished, more designed. I use as my inspiration my favorite sandwiches. Like, I'm from Philadelphia, so I think of hoagies. I think of cheesesteaks or roast pork sandwiches, which have, again, not like kitchen sink pizzas, but a number of ingredients that work together in harmony. And anything you can do on a sandwich, you can certainly do on a pizza. Pizza, as you said in the intro, is just dough with something on it, and a sandwich is just dough with something in it. So they're really kind of kissing cousins. So about half the pizzas that I came up with for this book were inspired by some of the great iconic sandwiches of the world.
Thank you so much, Peter.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I can talk pizza all day. So we have to take it offline sometime and we'll go out. Next time I'm in LA, let's go on a little pizza quest together.
I would love that.
Thanks, Evan.
That's baking expert Peter Reinhardt. We've been talking about baking pan pizza at home, also the subject of his new book, Perfect Pan Pizza. After the break, a new restaurant review from LA Times critic Bill Addison. Don't go anywhere.